Hey lovely people, it's Sass here. This is a solo episode before we take a short summer break for the podcast. I just wanted to catch you up on some stuff that's been going on. This year just feels like a magical mystery adventure. I kind of have no idea how I'm going to be at the end of it. I don't know if anyone else is feeling this. There's something about a lot of stuff being processed really quickly. And on the other hand, I feel like there's so many parts of my life that feel like they're in limbo. So there's this weird paradox of discomfort that I'm kind of navigating personally. And I just thought I'd talk about it because it's so nice to think of you sitting there with a cup of tea, or maybe you're on a walk, or you're doing the dishes, or however you listen. And I'm just catching you up. Like, we're old pals. Hey guys and gals and non-binary pals, this is Courage and Spice, the podcast for humans with self-doubt, hosted by me, Sass Petherick. I'm a coach and supervisor, and I'm a little bit obsessed with how we heal the root causes of our self-doubt. On the podcast, you can expect interviews with delightful humans and evidence-based resources and original coaching tools. So if self-doubt is holding you back, then Courage and Space was made especially for you, with so much love. I'm so glad you're here. So there are three big shifts happening in my world right now. And some of them you probably know about. And if we are connected in different places in the interweb universe, some of them maybe not. So here goes. Earlier in this year, we went back to New Zealand for the first time in over a decade for me. And I was pretty shaky about going back. It's been a year since my father-in-law passed away, and we wanted to catch up with family. It just felt like a really good time to go. Last time I was in New Zealand, I was 3 months sober. And if you've ever stopped doing any kind of problematic behavior that was maybe helping you avoid some difficult stuff, you'll know what it's like when you stop doing the avoidant behavior, right? All the stuff you were trying to live without actually comes up and says, hi, we need to talk. And that was my experience of being home last time. It was really difficult. All I wanted to do was drink, because that was my preferred way of feeling comfortable in any kind of social situation. And everywhere I went, people would say, do you want a drink? Can I pour you a glass of wine? You know, what are you drinking tonight? And it took everything in me to say, I'm not actually drinking right now. And then there would be the inevitable questions. Are you pregnant? Are you doing this for religious reasons? Is there something wrong? And I would have to kind of explain, I'm just not drinking right now because, you know, I'm trying not to drink. I'm not great. I don't really like myself when I'm drinking. And then there would be the uncomfortable silence. I really needed to find a way to say it without saying it, you know. And New Zealanders like to drink. Like, it's a very alcohol social country. And people forget after they've had one or two wines that you aren't drinking. So I'd often have to have that conversation 3 or 4 times with different people on the same evening. It was not fun, and I felt angry and resentful, and it's like, man, I'm trying to be a different person. I want to see who I can be without this thing that has kind of created this black cloud in my existence. And all I felt was this constant invitation to come back to it. It was really tricky. So I spent the whole trip feeling really jangly and kind of not fully in my body, not comfortable. All of my sort of places and resources just felt kind of scattered to the wind. And I honestly think that's one of the reasons why I haven't been back home to Aotearoa for so long, is I've sort of associated this bad experience with New Zealand. So going home this time, I was a bit shaky on it, even though I have now been sober for over 10 years, and very happily so. And I definitely feel like I've grown into my new sort of sober identity. It was really interesting to notice how much I've changed in the 10 years since I was last home, but also how differently I felt when I was there. If you were listening a few episodes back, I recorded a episode with Sammy, my good friend, and we talked about, you know, a conversation that we'd had that had lasted very, very many hours on Papamoa Beach, and how lovely it was to chat with a fellow coach who I'd only been connected with online, just about going home and being home. Sammy Fleming and her family had lived in Australia for a number of years, and so we both had this kind of renewed experience of being in this country that had birthed us. And there is something so uniquely visceral about being in your homeland, I think, especially if you spend or have spent many years of your life with your heart in a couple of different places. So I found that I actually had a completely different experience of being home this time. A lot of that was to do with, I think, just where I'm at in my life, but also I think the relationship that I've built with Ash's family, my partner's family. We had some really fun, light, easy gatherings with Ash's family. I'd never felt light or easy in many of those contexts before. And it was lovely. I had real moments of connection with people in his family that I had always felt very different from, and kind of like we were talking past each other. And for some reason on this trip, we connected and it was beautiful. That was a really transformative experience. And I felt kind of at peace with being in New Zealand. And the longer we spent there, we were only there for 10 days. But as those days kind of rolled over, we realized just how isolated Ash's mum is feeling right now. It's been a year since we lost my father-in-law. And we just kind of felt like we should be here. It's really intense when you go home to your home country and you don't live there. There is often this really intense experience of being kind of in each other's faces the whole time. And it can make it quite a stressful time, I think. Whereas, you know, I would just love to be able to catch up with people maybe for a coffee once a week or a meal once a week. You know, that's my pace. So the idea of what if we were just around more? What if we could be more present and share in the care of my beloved mother-in-law, who is not having an easy time of it and who is embracing wholeheartedly her cranky crone energy? And it was a really easy decision when Ash said, I think I need to think about where I need to be right now and what would happen if we were here. So we've decided with pretty full hearts, actually, that we just want to be really present for this season of my mother-in-law's life. And we've decided to go home for a period of time, probably at least a couple of years. So we're going to have our feet in New Zealand sand in time for Christmas this year. And we'll rent our own home out. That was a surprisingly easy decision too, to say, oh, this beloved home that we have poured our hearts into, we, you know, to kind of give this up even for a period of time. I thought that would be a real wrench, but there's something about going home to do this and be present with Ash's family, particularly his mum, just feels like the right thing to do. It's like made all of the other decisions that have gone along with that much clearer, I think. And we're taking Bodhi with us. That's proving to be admin purgatory, because bless New Zealand, they see any living creature as a potential biohazard. That's why the bird life is so spectacular. So we're going to be home for Christmas, which if you had told me this last Christmas, I would have been dumbfounded. It was the last thing that was ever, you know, a thought in my mind. So there is this sort of countdown that's on at the moment. We are having two summers in a row, which feels like being totally spoiled, although there's a lot of rain involved in both, I suspect. But it does feel like a mix of grief and loss of leaving here and the people that I deeply care about, and also real excitement and trepidation about, you know, taking my business into a whole new place and what does that mean and will people in New Zealand and Australia still want to work with me? And all of that is kind of present. So I'm just trying to stay really present to what's next to do and trying to be gentle with ourselves around how we navigate the next few months. But yeah, it's a pretty big deal for us personally. It feels like, well, it's bringing up all kinds of questions around, you know, when we come back and would we come back and where do we want to retire to and all of those kinds of things, which I honestly thought they were questions that had been put to bed. The only time in the last 10 years that I have questioned that slightly was I had a reading done by an energy healer a couple of years ago, and she said to me in a channeled state, her message to me was, when you return to your homeland, things will open up in a different way for you. And I was like, no, well, that won't be happening. So yeah, it was a really profound conversation, but I do remember her saying that and me kind of startled by that and thinking, no, I don't think that's going to be happening. I was pretty certain about that. But that conversation returned to me recently and I thought, oh yeah, you know, sometimes. And this is going to sound like a habit, but I have an annual astrology reading with an amazing woman. I'll put her links in the show notes, Phyllis. She is just an absolute human gem. And she said to me just after I got back from New Zealand, she just did say, oh yeah, like for both you and Ash, like there are things on your soul's path that can only happen if you are not here. Like you need to be in a totally different energy. And you know, that conversation I had with Sammy on Papamoa Beach, she said to me, there is such a playful energy in New Zealand. Can you feel it? Like she really was helping me ground and helping me connect back to into the land. And we were standing on this beautiful beach and there was this very playful energy present. I could feel it. And so I just wonder what that all has in store for both of us. And, you know, I guess this is one of the things that I found the more that I have sat with and made peace with and that I'm kind of able to be with all my doubts and my fears and my worries. There's something about this, you know, this is willfully, consciously, intentionally creating a ton of uncertainty. And yet there's something about tapping into that intuition of, but is this the right thing to do? Even though it may not make logical sense, I think there's something about, you know, seeing through the haze and the fog of all of those worries, doubts, and fears, and actually to the truth of it, which is that, you know, right now in my heart, I can't imagine not going home. So that's a thing that's happening. I will keep you updated. The second thing that's feeling really kind of shifting, something's morphing for me, is, I don't know, the sense of limbo that I feel right now. And it could just be the season of summer, and that always makes me feel a little more languid and a little more rested, although I tend to fight it pretty hard. Long-time listeners will know that I've been focusing over the last few years on really reducing, one of the ways my self-doubt shows up is through over-functioning. You know, trying to take on too much, do too much. Often, you know, it annoys other people because I try and do what they need to do, all of that stuff. It's really dumb. And it makes complete sense because I feel so much safer when I'm in action. Otherwise, you have to feel stuff and that's usually inconvenient. But I've been finding, as that has been a real focus for me over the last couple of years, I'm genuinely more comfortable doing less these days. So right now I'm really trying to just work less at lots of things. One of the ways that's showing up for me is with work. I'm only working sort of 3 days a week over the summer period, really from sort of June to September, and building much more of an offline life. I'm really hungry for some privacy in some ways, I think. I made a promise to myself when we moved to Bristol that I would not take my phone out of the house unless it was necessary. Like I needed it for a map or, you know, something else, or I was going to be away for a decent amount of time. So for things like morning walks, when I'm just walking Bodie and going to the park and walking through the trees, which is just such a glorious way to start the day, highly recommend it. I've never taken my phone on those walks, and I'm finding that there's actually more places that I do not want my phone to be with me. But yeah, this summer has been a lot of reading, a lot of cooking and feeding the people I love, reading a ton, swimming, pottery classes, just living. I feel way less identified with my work, but also maybe how I'm seen to be working, which is an interesting one. Like it's, my work is just no longer taking up so much space. I'm both bored and deeply satisfied by the work I get to do. If that's not a paradox to be sitting with. Yeah, it's fascinating. And it's been really interesting over the last couple of weeks. If you've been online at all, you'll probably notice the new app on the block, Threads, which is very much like Twitter, but run by Instagram. And it does seem to be, it does have a very different vibe. What I really noticed was a lot of people kind of feeding back to me the things that I've been thinking for a while around, you know, I'm just so turned off by inspirational quotes and advice and platitudes. And, you know, so much of this is in the coaching world. And I contribute to that, you know, even though I guess I'm trying in some small way to be helpful, but I'm just not sure if it actually is a great contribution. You know, I always find it kind of problematic when I'm being generalist, because the nuance and complexity of everybody's lived experience is so unique. It just feels like we've kind of been locked into this content creation game, and I'm just not sure who it serves, you know. So I feel like right now I just have very little to add to the online content world, except maybe some memes about how random and chaotic life is, which is comforting, I hope, in its own way. And I do that on Fridays on Instagram. I post a selection of what I call comfort blankets, just posts that have made me laugh or think or feel less alone, or just kind of, you know, wonder about the world. So yeah, it does feel like a creative limbo. And I can also see like there's a real value in this quieter fallow period. Like I'm just being drawn to other things, other areas of interest, ideas and concepts that really surprise me. Some are kind of fascinating. They feel very at odds with who I know myself to be. And I don't mean to sound cryptic, but there is a particular area of interest. I'm just not ready to talk about it yet because I find it's a little bit wacky. And when I get more comfortable with it, I can talk about it in a way that feels easy. But at the moment, it still feels a little bit like, what? It's so surprising to me. But I was watching this intro webinar yesterday of an approach that I have been quite fascinated by. I've been toying with maybe picking this up for the last few years. It's such a complete departure from my coaching work, from evidence-based, empirical-led coaching research, all of that. It's pretty wacky. And it is like, I just can't kind of stop myself. And it's utterly fascinating to me. I had full body chills watching this slightly hokey webinar. And I was sort of laughing at myself, like, can you just enjoy it? So I am feeling very called to just play with it. I do have that same sense of, you know, through all of the worries and doubts and fears, like there is a sense of, oh, there's something in this for me. And I have no idea where it might lead, whether it's for me or whether it's for me to share or what it is. But yeah, so it's fascinating. I think because I don't tend to let myself get into this place of having a fallow period, it's quite new to me to find myself turned on by something that is so different. And maybe this would have happened earlier if I wasn't trying to do all the things, right? And I guess the third area that's really kind of, it's delighting me and kind of blowing my mind in a lot of ways at the moment, is my relationship with my body. In March this year, I think it was, maybe even have been late February, I got a cold, winter cold. It turned into a chest infection, which became pneumonia. And I was pretty breathless and bedridden for quite a while. I was startled by how difficult it was just to breathe. It was so humbling to be just focused on the next breath. I ended up having 2 rounds of antibiotics. God bless the NHS. Whenever I feel unwell, it's such a vulnerable, awful time. I cannot imagine, for those of you listening from the States, I just cannot imagine having to navigate, you know, the ability to pay to be taken care of in those moments. Here, all healthcare at the moment is free at the point of need. And it's such a sacred part of British life, but it is not guaranteed. So I just really, like, I feel like I always need to say, you know, I don't want to take it for granted. So yeah, I had 2 rounds of antibiotics, a couple of doctor's visits. I seemed to be recovering. I was starting to get kind of interested in how can I take care of my lungs? Is there, you know, foods I can eat or supplements I can take? And, you know, what is the optimized, you know, way to take care of my lungs so this doesn't happen again? Because it was quite frightening. So yeah, I started walking a little longer and on my morning walks with Bodhi, breathing exercises. I've been really inspired for the longest time by my dear, dear friend, Helen Marie Rose, who some of you will know from the gram. She is just, if you have Helen in your life, you are one lucky SOB. And my other closest friend, Phil, who is a star, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about Phil in a minute, but Helen and Phil have both been strength training for years. And I thought, as I was walking more and feeling a little healthier and a little more into my fitness, I guess I wouldn't even call it fitness. I just wanted to be as kind of healthy and strong as I could be. I started working with a trainer a couple of times a week, and oh my God, I had no muscle tone. Like my first couple of sessions, it was literally just stretching because looking at kind of basic things like how do I walk and how do I lift things and, you know, the real basics of like squatting and lunging and, you know, how do I make my body do these things. It was very humbling again to just be like, whoa, I've got work to do. But in that process, I discovered that the twinge in my arm that I've been feeling for a few months was actually a rotator cuff strain. And that has been fascinating to witness, like how long it takes to support my body to heal itself. And about a month after I started weight training, I started developing this chest pain, which I thought was connected to my shoulder because it's on the same side. It's also on the same side as my heart. And like a total grown-up, I thought if I just ignore this, I'm a person with a long-standing congenital heart condition, by the way. If I just ignore it, it will probably go away. But the chest pain actually got worse. And I ended up, through basically my friends just taking care of me and kind of taking over and making decisions on my behalf, thank goodness, because I do have a pretty kind of icky relationship with hospitals. But yeah, my friend Phil just came around and said, okay, well, let's just call 111, which is a ambulance supported service here, and you can get immediate advice over the phone and they can refer you on. And within 10 minutes, they had sent an ambulance to check me out. And I spent about 9.5-10 hours in A&E getting a barrage of tests done. They were very worried about my pain because of the location of it. And it turns out that I had this quite serious inflammation of my lung. It's called pleuritic pain. So if you've heard of pleurisy, that's that. My doctor, my GP, who gave me a second round of antibiotics after I had been treated in A&E, said that the inflammation was as bad as the pain that you experience with angina. And I just am kind of gobsmacked by that, like how I could deny my own pain to just try and ignore this stressful thing. And pneumonia and pleurisy, I mean, these sound like diseases from the 1800s or something. All to say, it's been a pretty traumatic couple of months, body-wise, health-wise. And at the risk of giving you the coaching ick, I really don't want to do that. But it has led to a shift in my relationship with my body that feels very new. I suspect it's because I'm turning 50 this year. And while age is just a number, the patriarchy, blah, I mean, let's take that as given, there is a very real sense of mortality that I feel at this stage of my life. I am so much more aware of my body, my health, my general health, my strength, my ability to kind of move and live the life I want to live. It feels newly important to me. Witnessing my mother-in-law, you know, get frailer and frailer, it, partly because she just, you know, is finding it pretty hard to be here, it has really shown me just how much our health affects our quality of life as we age. And because the heart medication that I take every day, and I will for the rest of my life, it's never been tested on women in menopause, massive eye roll. This is very common, by the way. And so I've been advised not to take any kind of hormonal supplement or aid during menopause. So I'm going to be kind of raw dogging my way through it. And there's really good research around the kinds of choices we can make to support ourselves as we go through menopause and perimenopause. I'm really blessed. My cycle has always been very regular. I'm still ovulating. I have minimal symptoms. I realize that is a huge blessing and not the case for many, many women. So I've been doing some of the prep work for what will it take to have a long and vibrant old age. And I guess, you know, this is taking a bit to get my head around because I've spent most of my life believing I would die really young because my mum did and we share the same congenital heart issue. So I started kind of early on in April, May, measuring my recovery and how far I could walk around the park without stopping. I've started, you know, making different choices, trying not to go all or nothing because as someone who's always lived in a bigger body and has been, you know, totally sucked into diet culture in the past, I felt very uncomfortable about introducing anything like that into my life when I fought so long to just get to a place where I'm okay with my body. So I've had to kind of really check in with, because there is such a tipping point, isn't there? If you recognize yourself in that, you'll know. It's like we can call it health, but sometimes it just means weight loss, right? There is a bit of that in there for me. I would like to change the composition of my body a little bit. And I'm not sure what that means, if that's a genuine desire or if it is part of what I guess is diet culture telling me that's what I should want. But I've just been researching, like, what can I do to take care of myself? Here's a couple of things that have really helped me. I've been walking every day, just for maybe half an hour, strength training twice a week, massively prioritizing good sleep. So I take a magnesium supplement just before I go to bed, and that kind of helps me ease into sleep. It's the getting to sleep part that is a bit tricky for me sometimes. And I've noticed that really helps. Also, the bonus with magnesium before bed is that it keeps you regular and it's a nice morning experience. And I've been hydrating, like drinking a lot of water, making sure that I'm kind of constantly hydrated. And also adding protein and, you know, healthy fats, whatever that means to you, to each meal. I'm following some people on Instagram, this couple of women, I think they're partners in business and life. They have an account called Tactic Nutrition and they talk about all kinds of things. They have a podcast. They're magnificent. I love them so much. I'm learning a lot from them. So it's an ease-filled kind of shift and change that I'm starting to make. One of the things that I've loved about this is, if you had told me a few months ago that you would feel really comfortable in what is a very urban, male-dominated gym with lots of very fit people lifting heavy weights, I would have said, yeah, no, I think I want more than one that resembles a day spa, right? Give me lots of fluffy towels. But my trainer works from this gym. It is called Sweatbox, if you can believe it. I remember pulling up and the first thing I saw was this group of young black men. They were standing there in the car park with their shirts off, all laughing and chatting to each other. You know, that ease that young people have in their bodies, that are beautiful bodies, sculpted bodies. And I just thought, oh man, I am so out of my comfort zone. And they know me by name now. It's like, I feel so welcomed there. I belong there in some small way. And it's really made me think about all the places that I could belong, that I maybe haven't allowed myself to, or I've tried to protect myself from because of some anticipated risk that maybe they won't like me if I go there. All of this is kind of leading to this real shift in the relationship I have with my body. I have lost weight. I do feel good. But I think it's more that I'm tending to myself in a new way. There's just some real pride and joy in taking care of my body. And I think, you know, I've probably got to a place over the last few years of what we would call body neutrality, maybe, where I just would see my body as something as interesting as my hair kind of thing, or my brain. It's like a neutral thing that just makes up part of me. And there was no desire to really shift or change it. But I think these kind of health experiences, this sense of being really humbled by a illness has really, yeah, it's just really sparked something in me to take care of myself in a new way and to open myself up to a different kind of relationship with my body. So I just want to also let you know that I'm going to be talking more about this relation, the body relationship, when we return in September on the podcast. I've got some really fun guests lined up. I'm hoping I can bring Helen on to chat to you about how weightlifting has shifted her sense of self in her 50th year, because I want you all to meet her. And if you are interested in your relationship with your body, I want you to know that my really close friend Phil and I will be running a one-day in-person workshop. We get to hug, folks, November 3rd, Friday, November 3rd in Bristol. Now, Phil is a research psychologist. She's actually professor who runs the Centre for Appearance Research here in Bristol. And she has 20 years of studying body image up her sleeve. She's like a world expert. She's ace and has such a really human and very lived experience of body image and what that looks and feels like. So on that day in the workshop, it's called Embodiment, the workshop, we're going to spend the whole day just chatting with you about body image and self-belief. We've got some really fun exercises that are totally rooted in research around the best ways to kind of open yourself up to new ways of thinking about your body. There'll be loads of opportunities for connection, and we'll have an awesome lunch. If you've ever come to a workshop with me before, you'll know the vibe is usually there will be cake. Everyone's welcome. This is going to be so fun and kind of poignant for me because it will be my last working engagement before I fly out to New Zealand. So have a little look in the show notes if that has piqued your interest. But yeah, so 2023, so far, not what I expected. This may be true for you too. So just know that you're not alone. We're kind of in this together. I will be off to, you know, do some swimming and some reading and eating. And I'll be back in September with some awesome new guests and a little focus for the first few episodes about our body image. So take care of yourself, whether you are in the depths of winter right now or sitting in the sunshine. And if any of this resonates, please do like let me know, because that helps us both to feel less alone. I'm sending lots of love and I'll talk to you soon.